Welcome to season two of the Triple Existential Podcast. I'm your host, Ebi Cote Nord.
The choice to know. His arms wrap around her. Where have you been? She asks. Work. She knows he's lying, but chooses to believe him. He knows that she knows, but he chooses to believe that she doesn't. If he chose to believe she knew, he wouldn't be able to hold her while they fall asleep. He's fantasizing about the next time we're together, replaying the time we just shared and indulging in the scent of my perfume still lingering inside the hollows of his face. If she chose to believe what she knows is true, she wouldn't be able to fall asleep without trying to imagine my face based on the faint whisper of my perfume still lingering on his skin. She'd wonder if my hair is blonde and if my eyes are blue, and if I'm prettier than her. I'd have to be prettier, because she'd have to believe I'm not smarter or funnier or more charming. And if she chose to indulge in her questions, they'd eat at her until she searched for answers. And she'd discover my blue eyes and reddish hair, my unapologetic posturing about my anal sex skills. She'd be forced to wonder if her husband is the giver or the recipient and whether he likes it and what that could mean. She'd dig further and discover that I'm the mother of two middle schoolers and a warren of rabbits. That I'm a writer who loves Tex-Mex. And then she'd download this podcast. But she chooses not to think about it. She knows I keep him from her, and she knows what I smell like. But she knows he comes home, and she knows that's not enough for her to be happy. And I know this is true, and I know I choose not to think about it. I don't wonder what it is about her that he chooses to believe isn't enough. I know she's enough, and I choose not to know more. I don't want to know. I choose not to think about how her eyes are the same color as mine or that her body was phenomenal before the kids. I choose not to see that she's more accomplished and refined and educated, that she's the kind of woman who can be seen in public on his arm, but I'm his most shameful secret. I'm a vault of all the secrets I know she will never know. I know what he needs from me. She knows what he needs from me. I know one of the things he needs is for me not to worry about him when he leaves. And another one of those things is not to think about her while he's thinking about me. Because he chooses to believe that if I don't know about her, then she's not thinking about me while he's thinking about her. And when she's standing next to me in the produce section at Mariano's on a Tuesday afternoon, I don't know what's her when she asks, "Are any of these avocados any good?" and she doesn't know it's me when I tell her, "This one will be good tonight," as I place it in her hand. And she won't wonder what it means that I know what she needs. And I won't wonder what it means that her basket is full of ingredients for Tex-Mex. He'll never have to choose to not know that she'd met me. And we won't have to pretend that never happened. Because we all choose to not know what we do. Good evening, and welcome to the Triple Existential Podcast, the show that explores the naked truth of selling dressed-up lies. I'm your host, E.B. Cote-Nord, and joining me is my co-host and co-conspirator, Charlie West.
I guess I'm Charlie.
Oh.
That makes sense.
That does make sense. Nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed.
We haven't had any Freaky Friday secret body switches.
No, we haven't, and though we are trying to maybe scheme hatch some more guests. We've talked about a couple of guest episodes that we've scheme hatched.
And you're going to switch bodies with them?
Yes, I am going to switch bodies with them so they can be here in my body. And then switch bodies with you. And then it'll be a combo guest show with guest host, guest show takeover. And that just got way too complicated.
It did, because we're, yeah. I mean, I guess we're still the hosts because, like, they're using our bodies to, like, host the podcast.
Totally. It's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
And I think that we've just totally found a loophole to getting guests on the show.
Yeah. We just tell people that we're someone else. Well, I guess onto the content of the actual show. This is actually what my job is, by the way, is to, like, remember that we have a show that we need to do and not just have a fun conversation. Which is a bummer sometimes. But
it doesn't seem like your specialty.
It's not. I'm bad at it. You should really hire another co-host.
No one else lives here. Except for Nala the lawyer. She's not licensed to practice in this room.
So in this week's piece, I know that we, talked about doing a piece, and it was inspired by something else, which I'll, we'll get back to in just a second. But, this week in this piece, it's a really interesting read to me and also the listen. But, we've talked on this podcast and at other times about, a part of your job, the HIPAA rules, a part of your job is not crossing over into someone else's life. Mm-hmm. When they leave the room, they leave the room. Who they need to be when they're in the room is who they need to be when they're in the room. All the other stuff stops existing while you guys are together for your time. And this piece, can you walk me through what you're this is obviously kind of breaking the fourth wall a little bit.
Yeah, but it's also not. I mean, this is talking about the things that I choose, what we don't know. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that everybody involved knows all of this stuff about the other people involved. And we choose, we make an active decision and choose not to think about those things. I don't believe that, all of these wives have no idea.
Yeah, that seems implausible to me.
Having been a wife, it just doesn't. And now an ex-wife. Why I'm an ex. That's true. That's not why I'm an ex-wife. But it's just these things about the people that you live with. Even if you don't know, you can choose not to know, and you can choose to look past things you don't want to know. And sometimes we want to not know something so badly, it doesn't feel active. It doesn't feel like an active process, mm-hmm. You still know.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I'm also an a recovering alcoholic and recovering drug addict. And like, while I was using, it didn't feel like an active process to like deny that I had a problem.
I was actually just going to say that like a lot of what you just said reminds me of things that you've said on the show about like your addiction being like, I don't have a drug and alcohol problem. I have this other thing.
But there was it felt like I was being very intellectually honest, but there was a lot of like mental gymnastics that I had to do to make it really legitimate to myself that I didn't have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I, you know, would think things like, this is the behavior of somebody with a really bad drinking problem. Yeah. You know, waking up in the morning, afternoon, early evening in a pool of vomit on the kitchen floor is not, you know, I recognize that was something that people with drinking problems do.
Sure.
Not being able to get through a day without drinking was something people with drinking problems do. It was just different for me. But I recognized that I drank too much. So there was like hints. I would give myself hints.
Yeah.
And like, I think that, you know, whether I actively knew or didn't, I knew.
And I think that there's something like refreshing about the piece that acknowledges that like you are, you know, that there are partners, you know, I know in the piece, it's wise, but like, you know, partners that, you know, it could be girlfriend, whatever, but like, I mean, like partners are aware of something. There's that something. It could be you. It could be, is he gambling? Or where is he going when he's supposed to be at work? I mean, like, people insert immediately, like, infidelity. But, like, I mean, it's like sometimes that space is, like, something's not adding up, but I'm not going to go get my calculator.
Yeah. But I think there's also a lot of choosing, you know, from the husbands who are, you know, the client half of the partnership, the husbands, the boyfriends, that choose to believe that their partners are completely unaware.
Mm-hmm.
Or that if they don't talk about their partners, I won't be aware of them.
It reminds me in a way of something that you we're talking about once that I think keeps like popping up for me as we continue these conversations through time is like when we talk about the humanity of sex workers, if we talk about like the, you know, the reality of sex workers as a human experience, as people who do this work, the clients are people, your people, their families are people, everyone's a people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the client, you know, provider relationship is a relationship with particular rules and restrictions. And this is an aspect of that relationship. I think that's why it's important to talk about, which is that like, this is a requirement for the existence of the relationship.
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, for me, there's this idea that, you know, I sleep with married men. That is true. I sleep with married men. And there's this idea that I should feel bad about that. I should feel bad about what this does to marriages. And, you know, I make a lot of jokes like on Twitter about, you know, sleeping with husbands and whatever and dads. But the reality is that do I feel bad? I just think that it's more complicated than, you know, I'm doing something wrong, he's doing something wrong, she's doing something wrong. You know, if I'm not sleeping with my clients, my clients did not seek me out because I was the only person available. You know, I'm not the only, you know, they sought me out because they were looking for something and I was there to provide the service. If it wasn't me, somebody else provides that service. Like, you know, if your husband is looking for a hamburger and, you know, because I don't open a hamburger shop, that's not going to stop him from eating a hamburger. I'm never going to own a hamburger shop. Your husband's still going to eat hamburgers. Like, that's just true. You know, I don't think that anyone involved is like a bad person or a lesser person. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm on my client's side because that's my client and I care deeply about my clients. I'm on her side because she's a human being and she deserves to be happy. I'm on my side because, like,
you're a human being and you deserve to be happy.
Because I'm a human being, yeah. Also, like, go Team EB. Like,
yeah, go Team EB.
Who isn't on my side? Yeah.
Well, I definitely get the sense from the piece that there are no martyrs and there are no heroes and there are no villains.
I was totally the hero because I helped with the avocado.
Okay, never mind. There is one moderate hero of avocado.
It was an avocado.
Okay, so a profound heroic act did occur in relation to avocados.
Yes.
Because I think I have a valid point to make.
Okay. I do too. And if that, I'm a hero. Okay. Go on.
But that does bring me to like the thing that actually inspired the piece. Then when he originally talked about the episode.
Yeah. Was that the context that we actually brought up was not, you know, who does and doesn't know in client-provider relationships, but actually who does and doesn't know in my personal life.
Yeah.
And that is my parents. Mm-hmm. Like, my parents actively choose not to know.
Yeah.
And conversations about where my money comes from get real weird.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. Like, how are you going to feel? Yeah, like, and they, like, just don't ask.
You know, back in December when I was having my plastic surgery, I was talking to them about, you know, yes, this is something that I could afford. And I was asking them to co-sign a loan for me to get the surgery done. And I was like, don't worry about it. I can handle this. And they were just like, yeah, we don't want to know how. We're not asking. Like, it was funny because they didn't want to know where the money came from. And, you know, they know we have a media group.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, they know. I mean, I've been in the Chicago Tribune.
You've been in the Chicago Tribune giving an interview about what you do.
Yeah. And my photo is featured very prominently in that story.
Yeah.
I mean, it was about being a sex worker and how I was going to handle the pandemic, and the details of my life were, you know, I'm not secret about it, but they do know. And,
Didn't even want to feel like your relatives call you?
Yeah, I had relatives that called me, and it was very sweet. It was very kind. I had a cousin who sent me a message like, if you haven't gotten any love from the family, I just want you to know that he was saying that he and his wife are really proud of me and super supportive. And I thought that was really great. And then when we had our family Christmas Zoom meeting, it was really funny because, like, it was actually his mom was hosting the Zoom meeting, and she's like going around asking everybody how work's going and whether they're back in the office. And it was just like, she somehow like skipped right over my Zoom box.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's going in order. And then it was just like, there was no question for me about how work was going.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think that my parents, like, I don't think that they are, we don't want to talk about it. You know, I think they really have done everything they can to put it out of their minds. You know what I mean? I mean, you've met them, and I think that that's, like, they can't think about it.
And they're lovely, supportive human beings. I mean,
they love me more than they could possibly love anything.
Yeah. And I mean, and it's not like, you know, with your, I mean, I really want to disabuse anyone of the notion that, like, you know, people come from excellent homes and have substance abuse problems. mm-hmm. you know, and like people who've had substance abuse problems go on to have like there are people with excellent careers that are completely legit, like totally socially acceptable, who have substance abuse problems and excellent upbringings and bad upbringings. So it's a big mixed match. I mean, like, this isn't like you had a shitty home with shitty parents and you were a drug addict and then you became, you know, a sex worker. Right. This is nothing like that. You know, I mean, like, you had your parents are amazing to you, and they have been.
They always have been.
They always have been. But like, it is fascinating to me how, I mean, obviously they don't follow your social media, which is good for them, you know? I mean, like, the things that, you know, like, I'm sure your dad would have, like, a legit brain explosion, but, like...
He's never followed... I mean, you know, I was a writer before mm-hmm. I was a sex worker, and he actually didn't read anything that I wrote.
Oh.
And not because he doesn't support it, but he's just, like... He knew that I would write about personal things.
Okay.
And he didn't want to, you know, because I would write about, you know, I mean, I wrote for like a feminist publication. So like I would write about my own vagina, you know, but yeah, like, this is like, yeah. It's funny because like, you know, as the mother of two who's like married and like, you know, this is before I was a sex worker, and it was just like he couldn't handle like the fact that I would talk about these like reproductive issues from a personal perspective.
Okay. Okay.
And he's just like, that's really personal stuff. I support what you do. I'm really proud of you. I can't read it.
I just don't want to think about my daughter having a baby.
I would use 4-letter words. There was foul language involved. I would. Because we don't swear at my parents' house.
Wow, did I change that when I came to visit? Like, yeah. Drop an F-bomb.
I'm still like, when you swear in front of my... I mean, I'm 44 years old, and I do swear in front of my parents, like, Charlie! Not at the house.
I know, I get invited to, like, you know, like, oh, we're going to, like, cook something in the backyard. And I'm like, oh, good, cooking. And I show up, and I'm like... Ah, fuck, shit, blah.
Oh, my God.
Your parents, I'm sure, on the inside, I'm like, where did you find this dumpster person? In the dumpster. That's where. In the dumpster.
In the dumpster.
In the actual dumpster. Yeah. That's where.
Yeah.
I'm
so refined around the parents.
But they're also like, this is like, but this isn't a relationship in which like, you're not going to be like, this is my new Kate Spade bag. Look at my new Louboutins. Let's not talk about where they came from. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, cool. We're into that.
Yeah.
And then Charlie will go drop something outside and be like, fuck. Thanks for the distraction, Charlie. Go find one of the kids and help them curse too. You're good at that.
That must be where they get it.
I think according to your parents, it totally is.
No, like, I'm pretty sure it's my ex-husband.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
I mean, everything that's wrong
is the ex-husband.
I mean, totally, and I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah, no, he could be wrong for everything. I mean, yeah. Like,
what's like, funny is like he doesn't pay child support. He doesn't help financially at all. And they still are like, no questions asked. Like,
yeah, right. Oh, that's true. Like, he like contributes zero financially.
And, like, they ask questions about that. Like, has he paid child support? Like, has he paid? When was the last time he did? How much does he owe you? Like,
so it's like, you guys have all of the information you need.
Yeah.
So, like, okay, so are you an assassin or a drug dealer? And or a sex worker.
Yeah. I'm making this kind of money writing.
Totally.
Totally writing.
Totally writing.
Yeah.
Totally writing. I know, like, Charlie rents a room in the basement, but, like how much is she paying for that room? Don't tell her. but too much.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. But that's actually, but that's a good point. I mean, like, I think that's something that a lot of sex workers, like, run into. You're not the only one. It's just, like, people don't know what they
don't want to know.
Yeah, they know exactly what they don't want to know.
They do. I mean, and they, you know, and I think that when we make the decisions not to know things, I also think that they're not necessarily super conscious decisions. They're still choices.
They're totally choices. They may not be super conscious, but another thing I want to put in is that it may not be malicious.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't think it's malicious. I mean, I think that it's sometimes
it's self-preservation.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in the case of a marriage, it's not even self-preservation. It's like unit preservation.
Yeah.
You know, it's team preservation.
It's relationship preserving. Your dad is so funny.
He is funny.
He doesn't want to know about
me. He doesn't want to know. He didn't want to read my rating because he didn't want to read about me talking about having an ovary or two. And he, you know, he didn't want to think about how I got pregnant. And he doesn't want to think about this. And that is entirely consistent with who he is as a dad. And he's an amazing dad.
And, you know, actually, I don't know if it's necessary information to being a good dad.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it's, you know, I don't think that you have a bad marriage because you're choosing not to acknowledge this thing. I'm also not saying it makes sure, you know, I'm not saying like you're absolved. You have a good marriage. I mean, maybe you do, maybe you don't.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's terrible.
But like, I don't think that anyone involved is, you know, with no context, I can't say anybody involved is a good or a bad or a noble or an ignoble person.
Yeah, there's no, you know, villains, no martyrs, and no heroes as far as we can tell. There's just humans doing what they can do to be.
We're all here doing the best we can.
This has been the Triple Existential Podcast, the show that exposes the naked truth of selling dressed up lies. Thank you so much for sharing the space and time with me. I'm looking forward to our next endeavor. Sweet dreams.